Station number 12246, Lieutenant Colonel W. Waitman, Reel 31.
Lieutenant Colonel W.A. Waitman, Reel 31.
Is there anything else outstanding about Cyprus you would like to say, Colonel, before we leave it?
Yes, one other short period on my first Cyprus tour. Having flown from Jordan, Iraq, to Nicosia in the June of 1957, I joined the RAF Nicosia Mountain Rescue Team, and in early 1958, before the troubles erupted again, we were called out one afternoon to look for a missing Sycamore helicopter from the helicopter squadron, which was based at RAF Nicosia. It was located from the air in the Troodos Hills to the south of Makarar Monastery, where earlier the Duke of Wellington's regiment had taken out the second in command of Aoka previously, Captain Grigori Afficentio of Lisi. We got together the Land Rover vehicles, and the one I had been unserviceable. I was driving a Land Rover ambulance, and there was some problem with the electrics, which when we broke down we managed to fix with silver cigarette paper. And after a couple of hours journey off the main road, or really metal track, there weren't any main roads in the island at that time, we went by track to Makarar Monastery, as it was late in the afternoon, and there was no sign of life at the crash. The two occupants, the pilot and a passenger who was another pilot, as it happened, were both found to be dead. We staged the night at Makarar Monastery, and with a view to setting off at first light the next morning. This we did. The rooms in which we were given accommodation by the monks amused me, because round the walls were large framed photographs of Cypriot bishops of past and present with their huge beards. And I said to some of the lads, be careful if you're undressing, one of them might wink at you. Early next morning we got cracking again and walked up into the cultivated area of vineyards and then out into the scrub. And after a 2-hour march we reached the crash scene. A helicopter dropped off the Royal Army Ordnance Corps explosive expert, Major Bob Harrison, and he inspected the scene before we went in ourselves. He pronounced it to clear of any form of incendiary device, and later it was attributed to the tail rotor failure. The aircraft had swung round in the air without its tail rotor, and the passenger, Flight Lieutenant Higgs, one of the Hunter pilots, the seat was completely ripped out of its mountings by the gravity force that had flung him face first into the hillside. His shattered camera was beside him. The pilot, Bill Nuttall, was still in the wreckage. We got them both out as carefully as one could and put them into under the stretchers, covered them up. Casualty bags as such weren't out at that time, and commenced to bring them back. Unfortunately, Flight Sergeant Appleby, who was the regular member of the team from the RAF Physical Fitness Branch, decided to put the partly burnt body of Flight Lieutenant Bill Nuttall on the Thomas stretcher, which was the lightweight stretcher, and myself and four others had the body of Flight Lieutenant Higgs, who was a very heavily built chap, on an ordinary ambulance-type stretcher. We set off back over the Scree slopes, and it was very hard going, because the chaps at the front and the rear had one hand on each of the shafts. But the chap on the left was too low down, and the chap on the right was too high up, so the chaps at the front and the rear of the stretcher had 90% of the weight. And it took us some 6 hours over the Scree slopes to reach the footpath. When we reached the footpath, we saw an RAF regiment team coming out, A, to guard the wreckage, and B, give us a hand, and we were jolly pleased to hand over to them, as our wrists were absolutely shattered. So, as a result of that sad operational turnout, our names are in the Mountain Rescue Team log at Nicosia, which will have subsequently moved possibly to Akrotiri long ago, in Reading, as being an operational turnout. After leaving Cyprus, as I described in an earlier interview, I was based at RAF Leeming, which at that time was number 228 Operational Conversion Unit. I was there station regiment officer and the intelligence security officer in charge of the firefighting flight, the ground defence training section, and the small six-man RAF police section. At a very, very interesting time, we managed to nobble a few villains, particularly with chaps flogging cigarettes that had been stolen on Teesside, and aircraft accidents. One particularly spectacular one was a javelin coming in from Fighter Command exercise warm-up in 1961, and Flight of Elphick aircraft, possibly through an electrical fault or finger trouble touching the wrong button, the starter cartridge fired and the splinters went into fuel tanks and the aircraft brewed up. By the time I got to the scene, the fire tenders ran out of foam without putting the fire out. So I yelled to the Mark 6 driver, Williams from Spittle, Berwick-on-Tweed, to move the Mark 6 fire tender forward, which he did. Corporal McNally ran out the CBM hose. And we sprayed the aircraft. First of all, I directed him to put the fire out on the starboard wheel, which was blazing merrily. I grabbed a CO2 extinguisher and put out the starboard engine fire. And then I climbed up onto the aircraft. McNally handed me the CBM and I put the rest of the fire out. We were lucky to save the aircraft. Wing Commander Flying, Victor Duclos, said, "Leave it, let it burn out and blow up, whatever it wants to do." I said, "No, we'll put it out," and we did. And all we got in return from the senior air traffic control officer, who was a miserable fellow, was criticism for not getting it out with the foam. But as it happened, McNally had deployed his vehicles too far away from the vehicle, from the his vehicles too far away from the javelin. But on my arrival, that was rectified, and McNally and I succeeded in extinguishing the blaze with the chlorobromomethane firefighting agent and the CO2 cylinder, which I used on the starboard engine.
Was life in the forces at this time, was it common to have these niggling kinds of things which you probably didn't meet during the war?
Yes, you've got people who are empire builders, and actually not at the scene. Squadron leader, senior air traffic controller, who was a chap I was friendly with, Ken Holmes, panicked and called out the fire brigade from North Allison and us for assistance from RAF Catrick. They came on the scene when it was all over. But complete overreaction. I still think at the time he was hoping to get his MBE, which he got for devising an air traffic control radar turntable, because from the air traffic control tower at Leeming at that time, you couldn't see the whole runway because the view to the left was blocked off by two hangars, because only the main north-south runway was in use. The wartime east-west runway was not used at all. Subsequently, of course, now it's Tornado Base, they built a new air traffic control tower on the west side of the airfield, where the whole of the airfield and the surrounding area is under full view. Another aircraft incident took place one night when Flight Lieutenant Norman Want, on detachment from RAF Leckenfield with 72 Squadron, bigger part, 29 Squadron, as the Leckenfield runways were being lengthened, came in, and the air traffic controller had left the barrier up at the north end of the runway when the runway direction had been changed to take off south to north. So when Norman came in to land, he went straight into the crash barrier. Luckily, he was making a very low approach, and the aircraft didn't somersault, and all he got was mud on his shoes. Then, not long after the Javelin fire, Station Commander Jimmy James and I were just standing talking by the guardroom and fire section late one morning when we saw Javelin come into land, and it suddenly started to go around like a roundabout on the grass with mud flying in all directions. And that was put down and nicknamed Crossland's Crosswind, but it was thought that he had his foot on the brakes. And of course, he swung off the runway and went onto the grass, fortunately, and no fuel tanks ignited, and they got out quite okay. The post was disestablished on RAF Leeming number 228 Operation Conversion Unit, becoming number 3 Flying Training School, and after a month's detachment to RAF Euston in Northumberland, west of Newcastle. Euston at that time was headquartered number 11 Group of Fighter Command. I did a month there as Group Intelligence Officer and then moved over to RAF Leckenfield. At Leckenfield I did the same appointment of Station Regiment Officer and Internal Security, Intelligence Security Officer. The fire section and the ground defence training was my responsibility, and as a result of doing the long intelligence course, I was able to introduce first-rate security and counterintelligence training to the air and ground crew in the ground defence training programme, and get it away from the bushy top tree fire control order image up to discussing the complete organisation of the five Soviet air forces and the like. I was also able to get some very good up-to-date American training films from their library in Buckinghamshire. Whilst at Leckenfield, we had one major fire in a scrap compound one Sunday morning started by children, which was blazing merrily when we got out of church. We got the fire section there, and one of the areas on fire was stacked vehicle tyres, and of course it was burning from the bottom. However, I got the fire section to prop a ladder up against the chain link fence and direct the jet downwards, and within a short while the fire was under control and extinguished. One of my airmen, Bomber Brown, did the right trick by getting the fire axe and smashing the lock off, because our main concern was to make sure there were no children who'd started the fire trapped anywhere within the compound. They had legged it, so we were rather pleased that there were no injuries, burns and fatalities involved. Then a neighbouring farmer, Mr. Lant, one of the farms in the village, his strawn hay barn was on fire, and we spent the best part of a day and a half overnight assisting the Civil Fire Brigade extinguishing that. It was all good practice for our fire crews. During my 3 years at Leckenfield, the two squadrons, number 19 fighter and number 92 fighter squadrons, converted from Hunters to Lightnings. The northern approach to the runway, about a quarter of a mile out to the north, there was a wide and deep ditch, would obviously be an obstacle to fire vehicles in the event of an aircraft undershooting or overshooting the runway. So I was able to put a case up to establish two extinguishers on the search and rescue helicopters of number 202 helicopter squadron, division number 228. But while we were there, they took the standard and the old number of a former flying boat, seaplane squadron number 202. The standard, incidentally, was a Mallard Drake flighting just as it comes into land, and I was able to get them alive, Mallard Drake, and my station regiment flight, Warrant Officer Atherton, Sergeant King, marched the Mallard in a cage onto parade for Squadron Leader Jeff Staff at the Squadron Commander to receive prior to their actual standard parade. And Fred became a familiar figure on the airfield. Eventually they got a duck for him, Frederica, and they bred many small Freds over subsequent years. Again during this time, I ran the field sports, the rough shooting syndicate at RAF Cowden and Leconfield, and when the Thaw stations closed in 1962, I got the shooting rights at RAF Breeton, RAF Full Sutton, RAF Carnaby and RAF Driffield, so we had a very good shoot indeed. Crime-wise, we dealt with various people, whether it was airmen picking up and stealing cannon shells, cannon shell cases at Cowden and flogging the brass. We nobbled a couple of them. We nobbled a WRAF pilot officer for semi-nude photographs of herself taken by an NCO from RAF Digby. And we nobbled a flying officer, assistant housing officer, who flogged a complete house full of furniture, which was a high rig in Kingston upon Hull. So we were fairly busy. In March, Easter of 1964, I went off to RAF Manor Beer for a 6-week anti-aircraft gunnery course, which in some ways was merely a repetition of what we'd done in Cyprus in 1958-59 on the Bofors L-4070 anti-aircraft gun. However, I used this as an opportunity to get fit and get my weight down. And the morning I came back, a hunter was missing from aerobatic display practice. The search and rescue helicopter found the wreckage near RAF Carnaby, and the Wing Commander Flying handed it over to me. I went out there by chopper. My chaps followed by vehicle, a guard, and we got the area secured from the press and TV people and the like. Sadly, it was Mac Cameron who crashed this Hunter Mark T7 when he was warming up for a solo aerobatic display. Within a week, another fatality occurred. I was ill at home with flu, but Sergeant King came dashing round for me. I leapt into uniform and we shot up the road to Hutton Cranswick to find that a Lightning had crashed. Wing Commander Flying was at the scene, and I said, "Who is it this time, sir?" He said, "George Davy." And losing anyone is sad, but George had been a friend when he was doing the javelin conversion course at Leeming in 1961, 3 years earlier. Mac had no chance to, could have ejected, but was obviously trying to relight, and his Hunter clipped the ground, and he was with the wreckage. George was low on fuel, decided to come in the normal way instead of joining downwind, and left his ejection too late. He'd had a lot of neck trouble and had his head and neck, his neck in a brace for a while, and whether he thought that might be aggravated by ejecting, I don't know, but he left it too late, and the seat fired just as the aircraft hit the ground, and poor George was blown right across the field, and we picked up what was left and got it back to the medical centre. I organised both funerals, and the squadron commander at the time was my next door neighbour, Squadron Leader Paddy Hine. I met him again after a gap of 25 years at the Golden Jubilee dinner in the London Guildhall in February of this year, 1990, when he was a guest at the Parachute Regiment Airborne Forces Golden Jubilee dinner. And I'm pleased to say now that he's directing the British Air and Ground Forces in the Gulf as the Air Office Commanding in Chief Strike Command based at High Wycombe. On the ground, of course, he has General Sir Peter Le Billier, who is from the Durham Light Infantry, and on the Tornado side, Group Captain John Vroom, who was the previous commander of RAF Leeming, where the Tornadoes come from. And in November of 1964, well, in the October, my family moved to a headless family's married quarter at RAF Driffield, and we were able to take our pick and got a very nice quarter that was previously occupied by another friend, Fletcherman Bob Manning, and his wife Gina. And we attended Paddy and Jill Hines' farewell party, and then I was off to Cyprus. As I mentioned in an earlier interview at the station, Gordon Robson of Moores and Robson's Brewery, now part of the Mighty Bass Group, again helped me with my kit. He'd been on the Hull station when I went to Cyprus and Suez in November 1956. And at Akrotiri, having flown out by Britannia from Lynham, I joined number 34 Light Attack Squadron, which was part of number 3 LEA Wing, with number 27 Squadron, its sister squadron. And I took over as 2IC of 34 Squadron. I then moved to the Wing Headquarters as training officer. And in 1965, August-September time, pressure was on RAF Camaxa in Aden, and they needed reinforcing, so number 27 Squadron was detached from Akrotiri to Camaxa. They were accommodated in the Red Sea Hotel, known as the Red Sea Doss House, but did their duties on the airfield and the adjacent radio unit. We supplied them with spare chaps from 34 Squadron of the Wing Headquarters to make up their numbers where there was the odd deficiency. And one of my gunners, who was my storeman at 3 Wing, in the 3 Wing stores, Senior Air Craftsman Smitten, he went with 27 Squadron. And sadly, 2 months later, on going from Marla, which lies between Aden proper and RAF Camaxa, the Red Sea Hotel was in Marla, top end of the Marla Strait, Camaxa end of the Marla Strait. He was going to visit some friends in the army down at Steamer Point in Aden and got on the wrong bus, which went round through Marla Township, Arab Quarter, and he was bumped off and chucked out of the bus. So he was our first and only casualty when the 27th Squadron were there. I went in the middle of December to umpire the changeover when 34th Squadron were leaving 27th Squadron to check all the arms and ammunition, the radio sets, control stores and the like. And that went very smoothly. But as 34th Squadron were 2 officers short, I volunteered to stay and stayed for a full 17 days. Missing the bar to the General Service Medal, of course, or the new General Service Medal, by 13 days. But I had to come back for parachute refresher course. Christmas was very pleasant. We made the most of our time there. And I persuaded 2 or 3 British United Airways hostesses to come and help the officers serve the Christmas meals. And most of the lads got a kiss if they wanted one. That evening, I was entertained by Squadron Leader Adams and his family at the married quarter at Camaxa, and I appreciated the Christmas meal with the Adams family very much indeed. I was able to thank him again when I met him in 1969 at RAF Wittering, when I popped in refueling on the way down to RAF Abingdon for parachuting. The journey back by Britannia, I'd flown out by Comet, was one leg to Bahrain, where we stayed overnight, and the next day took off. and it was a smashing view from the Brit to look at Lake Urmia, the surrounding mountains covered in snow, Lake Urmia in northern Iran, and then Lake Van in eastern Turkey. Looked majestic and picturesque with the surrounding countryside white over. And having got back to Akrotiri, we went straight on a parachute course, in my case a refresher, because I'd had a long gap, and for others the basic course. But we all had to do the same course, and on my fifth jump I banged my coccyx on landing and did another one that morning. Came in forwards and deliberately pitched forward, and Flight Sergeant Herford, in charge of the training instructors, said, "By Joe, you pitched in there," so I said, "you would have had a bloody back like mine." So for the next three jumps, including the final night jump, they rigged my the D-rings on my shoulders so that I leant forward to keep me off my back. But I was determined to complete the course and did. But it took a lot of hot baths and I suppose a certain amount of grit to do it. But I was jolly pleased when the red and green came on the night jump, which was the last one. And we had a beer on the DZ and a blazing fire and hot dogs. And the families were there to greet us in the dark. Thereafter I became second command of the Parachute Rescue Force, which was a nice follow-on from the Mountain Rescue Team. Although the Mountain Rescue Team had in the meantime moved from Nicosia to Akrotiri, and Flight Sergeant George Bruce, who was also a parachute jumping instructor, showed me the old entry from the Sycamore crash in 1957 in an earlier logbook. Whilst in the Parachute Rescue Force and the 3A LA Wings training officer, on the sports side I played cricket for the station first 11, and I had three very good seasons of polo at the Episcopi Saddle Club, including being on the RAF Cyprus team of four against the Army, who were represented by the 5th Royal Enniskillen Dragoon Guards, who beat us quite comfortably 3-1 or thereabouts. On the Parachute Rescue Force side, my particular role was special safety, that is to say, in the event of a Britannia crashing with nuclear weapons on board, which were brought out in containers to various bases in the Mediterranean and the Far East. New cores were taken out and old ones back to Harwell. What the servicing involved was neither my concern or anyone else's. It was there for the specialists to deal with the atomic and nuclear weapons. But in the event of an accident spillage occurring, it would have had been marked out, monitored, and eventually cleared up. But having done the special safety course at Tarif Katrek, that was my particular concern. We had a mountain rescue element within the Parachute Rescue Force, which numbered 48 personnel. Squadron Jerry Wilson was the commander. And I was his 2IC. In addition to land rescue, we were trained for sea initial rescue. Whilst we had the Marine Craft Air Sea Rescue launches at Limassol, if there was anyone in the water that needed help, we could be dropped down to their aid. And we had a medical officer and medical orderlies, again, within the parachute rescue team. We did a simulated desert rescue exercise, and most of us went through the desert rescue and desert survival course at RFL Adam under the well-known Czech officer there. And we were due to do exercise Sandfly at Tamimi near Bomba in the Libyan desert. And after two abortive attempts from RAF Nicosia, we eventually carried out that exercise. But on the first aborted exercise, I was commanding the team, and Jerry Wilson was still at RAF Nicosia at the time as ground defence officer there. He hadn't come to Akrotiri. and the pilot decided to beat up the DZ. On our way back to Aladdin, the aircraft crashed on landing and took fire. We wallowed through the air, but our straps held. Two chaps undid the straps and finished up on the floor. If the aircraft had overturned, they'd have been very badly placed. But out of 12 men carrying submachine guns, 11 carried them out. And when she took fire, the starboard engines, I thought, well, I've got to get our skates on. And she lumbered along, filling the sand, having shot off the runway and running along the runway shoulders. As soon as she stopped, Flight Sergeant Dougie Peacock, the senior PGI, said, right, come on, lads, make it snappy, just as if it was back at Abingdon. And we went out like corks out of a bottle.